The Functional Nerds podcast is brought to you by MapHook, a location-based social network available for free at maphook.com and as a free iPhone app. Find it, do it, share it, get hooked. MapHook.com. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Functional Nerds. My name's Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd, and I finished my novel.
Hooray!
I'm so excited, John.
I'm very excited for you, Patrick. I think that's great. Really, congratulations on that.
Woohoo! 93,000 words.
Very good, very good. Well, that is Patrick Hester, and as you could tell by his novel finishing, he is a writer. He's a writer, people. and I am a musician. I write songs about science fiction, fantasy, and other nerdy things, including the Geek Dad song, which you can go and get for absolutely free over at johnanilio.bandcamp.com. So if you're curious about my music, go and check that out.
You can't see it, but I'm doing the little chair dance right now, and it's probably a good thing you can't see it, but still.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not saying that. Yeah, very, very good. Anyway, please go to functionalnerds.com to check out a lot of the great content we have over there, including the fitness nerd and the booze nerd and the art nerd and the food nerd and all kinds of nerds, as well as lots of great reviews, book reviews, I should say, mostly, and some video game reviews, lots of cool stuff. We got a lot going on there these days. So, yep. And the Shadow Bites comic, I should not neglect that. So please go and check that out.
You don't want to neglect or forget Shadow, because if you do, he wakes you up 3 a.m. on the dot.
Yes, and pukes. So anyway, this week we continue with some of the Balticon interviews that I did a few weeks ago at Balticon in Baltimore, Maryland. And this week we have John Sprunk. John Sprunk is the author of Shadow Sun and the new Shadow's Lure, which is just out now. And they are from Pyre Books and they are fantasy novels. And I read Shadow Sun, which I loved. I thought it was excellent. And I have Shadow's Lure here. I have not read it yet, but I'm really looking forward to getting into that. And John was a great guy and really enjoyed talking to him. So I hope you guys enjoy the interview as well.
Okay, this is John, and I'm sitting with John Sprunk at Balticon. John is the author of Shadow Sun and Shadow's Lure, which will be coming out soon. It's not out yet, I don't believe.
Amazon's shipping Shadow's Lure right now.
Okay.
But bookstores might not have it for a couple weeks yet, so.
Okay, so both of these books are published through Pyre, and John Sprunk, I had the opportunity to interview John for the SF Signal podcast, I guess. Last summer, maybe. When did Shadow Sun come out?
It came out in late June, so yeah.
It's probably around right when it came out. Yeah. Loved that book. One of my favorite sort of, I mean, we'll call it fantasy, but it definitely has its own sort of take on the genre. And I'm very much looking forward to reading Shadow's Lure. So, John, why don't you tell us a little bit for the readers who maybe haven't read Shadow Sun, maybe you can give us a little bit of an idea of what that world is and what the characters are, and then maybe you could sort of lead that into where Shadow's Lure is going.
Okay, great. Yeah. It's mainly about an assassin named Cain, who's a lone wolf kind of guy. There's no assassin's guild in this world. It's nothing organized like that. It's more of a gritty, dirty, dark ages, southern medieval sort of land he lives in. So he's on his own. He has a tragic path that he unfolds gradually. And the book mostly kicks off with him it's a bad job. Goes south. Mm-hmm. He gets involved with the victim's daughter, and without giving too much away, mm-hmm. it becomes like a scheme sort of plot. Like he has to find out who's behind the double cross and why, and it ties into his own past eventually in some ways. So I think like the Bourne Identity movie. Set in a medieval world with some Batman Returns-esque noir ambiance to it. So it's mostly dark, gritty. There's a little bit of humor, but it's mostly snide and, off the cuff and little bits. It's not a humorous novel at all.
Yeah, no, I remember reading it. I remember there, you know, it, there is some points to sort of lighten up because it is a pretty gritty kind of world. And the thing that I really loved about Shadow Sun, and I'm a fantasy reader, so I love epic fantasy and I love millions of characters and big worlds. I love all that stuff. But what I liked about Shadow Sun is it's got a very tight focus on the main characters. And, you know, it sets up a good world, but it's really, compared to a lot of fantasy that has spanning continents and everything, it's pretty much within, you know, a fairly small geographic area and really focused on the characters. And so it's a very, for fantasy, for me, because I'm a pretty slow reader, it was a very fast read because it wasn't like, all right, you know, because there's a lot of times when you read some fantasy, you know, you're 100 pages in and all of a sudden you get a chapter and it's like, well, now this is something totally different. You have no idea. It's like almost like you're starting another book. And that's great. That's one of the, you know, the great things about fantasy is sort of getting immersed in that world. But if for someone who likes fantasy but maybe wants something that is more focused, I think Shadow Sun, I would highly recommend Shadow Sun for that. So maybe you can sort of give us a little bit of idea of what... coming out of that, because, you know, if we talk any more about Shadow Sun, we're going to end up giving away all the good stuff. You know, maybe you can sort of talk about how that leads into Shadow's lore, if you can, without giving too much away about the books.
Sure. Shadow Sun was written originally so it could be a standalone or it could lead to a series. I wanted it to be, it has resolution, but it has plot lines that could keep on going. So when I wrote the sequel, which is my first sequel ever, Atik came back to his homeland, you know, the tragic past I just spoke about, which he learned a little bit about in the first book, but there's still a lot very mysterious. In a nutshell, he's looking for his mother. His father was killed right in front of his eyes when he was very young. His mother was taken away from him. And now as an adult, and he's going to go back to his homeland and try and pick up the threads of what happened to her and what happened to his life back when he was 8 years old that totally threw him on this assassin dark path. So we take him back there, and it's obviously because it's a novel. It's not a nice, you know, daisies and sunshine journey. You know, he goes back to find his homeland is in chaos, and some of the enemies that he fought in the first book, their bosses and their masters are in his homeland. So he actually is fighting the same kind of. He's fighting the father figure of the enemies in the first book. So. He finds out more about, you know, his powers, which are to control shadows. Mm-hmm. He finds out a little bit more about where that comes from and why he has it. He finds out a bit more about his past. I won't go too much into that. Mm-hmm. But it's still gritty. It's still dark. Mm-hmm. But Kame also, he's grown a little bit. Mm-hmm. The focus in the first book is very much on him. The world revolves around him, you know, and... for good and bad. And the second book, I try to have him grow a little bit and realize that there is a world outside of his situation and people are affected by what's happened to him and what he's done. And he has to, you know, make some choices about do I live in the world or only for myself. So
that's great. So, you know, the other thing that I kind of wanted to maybe talk about a little bit with it is, or one of the things that I liked about you know, you mentioned sort of his ability to control shadow. So that's sort of within fantasy, that's sort of, you know, you can either call it his powers, or you can call it sort of like a supernatural element to the book or magic. You know, obviously with a lot of fantasy, that's a big part of it is sort of the magic or the power. And I really liked the way how that was handled because you can kind of go two ways with that, I think, in a fantasy novel. You can either just right from the beginning, just be like, it's a magic world, we're magic users, we're doing it, boom, and that's it. Or you could sort of subtly work it in. And I think both ways are effective, depending on the author and depending on the world. And I think you're in Shadow Sun, it's more towards the sort of subtly working it in, where it is, you know, almost in, you know, on one of the panels that I was on yesterday, it was called Shoulders of Giants, and it was talking about sort of classic science fiction and fantasy authors and how they influenced current sci-fi and fantasy authors. And one of the things that we were talking about on that panel was how, you know, depending on who your big influences are, you know, anybody who's writing today is either writing, is influenced by authors, whether they want to be or not, just in terms of you have to make a choice as an author. Am I going to, you know, sort of use this as an influence, or am I going to use it as reacting against it? So someone like, for instance, I think, and I, you know, I'm sure there was other works like this before, but someone like George R. R. Martin, where his, you know, fantasy is very gritty and not a lot of magic or supernatural stuff goes on.
Not
really.
Directly, no.
Yeah, it's very, it's there, it's but it's sort of in the background. It's more hinted at than anything else. And I wonder if someone like George R. R. Martin was kind of an influence on your own writing, or who are your influences, if not George R. R. Martin? Like, what's the kind of stuff that you like to read that sort of maybe led to influencing your current work?
Well, George isn't really an influence. I've read him, but I've started writing so long ago that before George was really on my radar.
Right.
So I enjoy him now as a fan, but he's not really critical in my development. I go back to like Robert E. Howard, Fritz Leiber, H.P. Lovecraft, Clark Ashton Smith, the supernaturalists who their magical worlds with. Even with Lovecraft, it was more blatant, but you didn't get a lot of explanation about why there was magic or aliens or gods, or the old ones. They were the humans pretty much were, you know, just thrust into a situation where you either survive or you're killed by the old ones. So I sort of took a lot from that, that I didn't want to have, that's one way of putting it, not that I didn't want to, but I don't think I'm capable of really devising a magic system and saying from page one, boom, this is my magic, these are my wizards, this is how they do it. The I appreciate the logic in that, but I'm not really capable of that only because I don't think that way anymore.
And sure.
I grew up in a way that magic exists in my world in some level. Sometimes it's more overt, sometimes it's more subtle. But the reader's going to have to find it out page by page and not just have it, you know, thrust upon them that way. So far, at least, you know. And even though Cain does have powers or magic, however you want to put it, he's not trained. It's totally by his birthright. And so he's unfolding the powers as he goes along. And the reader does too. And there's something about that appeals to me. You know, to have a world that unfolds chapter by chapter rather than it's thrust on you. I don't know. That's just how I approach
Well, and I'm glad you brought up Kame as a character, just because you know, one of the things that I liked about him, I mean, I don't know if you want to go ahead and call him an anti-hero or you know, he's the, you know, the protagonist of the novel, but one of the things that I think about a lot of times, and one of the reasons why I think as a reader, if you ask me if I liked science fiction or fantasy more, I think I like fantasy more, and I think the reason why is sort of this sort of archetype of the hero's journey is very powerful. Whether you're aware of it or not, for someone like me, it's very powerful, that idea of the hero's journey. And I think it was, I can't think of the name of the author right now, but I read a book about how it sort of, it was called like The Key, how to write for the hero's journey, and it basically took, I want to say it was James Frey, not the James Frey on the Oprah Winfrey.
Okay. Like,
there's another James Frey, and I think he goes by his middle initial now, so I think that's who it is. But anyway, he sort of took those Joseph Campbell ideas and just really sort of simplified it and laid it out, and how as a writer you can use those, just to sort of become aware, because I think a lot of writers work these ideas of the hero's journey into their work, probably subconsciously, just because if you've read a lot, if you've watched movies, you're probably pretty familiar with the hero's journey. It's sort of, you know, and that's Joseph Campbell's whole trip, is that you go through societies all around the globe through the history of time, and these archetypes kind of exist everywhere.
Everywhere.
You know, and you know, the hero's journey is really sort of a metaphor for growing up, you know. I mean, because keep in mind, you know, we live in a world where we live a long time now, but that was certainly not always the case, you know. So that period of sort of your teenage years into your 20s was kind of your life, because a lot of people only made it into
their 30s.
Yeah, their 20s or their 30s, you know. If you were 40, you were a wizened old man, you know. So that was really powerful. And one of the things I think with the hero's journey, I mean, James Frey in that book really talks about this can happen and this should happen and this, and you know, in some ways I'm sure some people would be sort of turned off by that idea because it is almost sort of like a manual for how to do it,
a formula, right?
Yeah, but it's interesting because after I read that book I noticed how these ideas pop up in a lot of things, and one of the things with Kame that I found very interesting, because it's certainly not a typical hero's journey, you know, like we're going on a quest and we're doing this, but I think he kind of does go on his own, if not like an overt journey, his own sort of personal quest. And one of the things is sort of that the hero is not perfect, and not only is not perfect, but is often sort of injured. There's a thing, and then that sort of happens in the first book where you put him through the ringer. he gets messed up at points. And so is that something that you were sort of aware of, that like, all right, I have to make it real hard on this guy, and not physically hard, because I remember at one point in the book going like, oh, he's really hurt. Like, he's, you know, this is not like, oh, I scrape myself and I'm gonna move on. It's like, oh, he's really hurt. Like, we've got some stuff to get through here.
The action hero syndrome where you get shot and you get back up again.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, part of it was subconscious, I'm sure. Like I was saying earlier, you know, the first book sort of is about adolescence. Even though Kame is 25 in the book, mm-hmm. emotionally he's an adolescent mm-hmm. in some ways. He's very focused on what gets him through life. Mm-hmm. You know, and he has to learn that there are other people involved and that, you know, yada, yada, yada. And as far as he starts off broken. Like I said, at 8 years old, watch your father killed in front of you and your mother's taken away from you, and then to be pretty much raising yourself almost up mm-hmm. until, you know, the 20s, you know, he starts off broken internally. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to explore that, you know, and what does that mean to have a broken man and then have him be in charge of someone else's life, and you know, how does he approach problems and that kind of thing. And, you know, and also the problem of, you know, for a realistic assassin, you know, modern day hitman or whatever, you know, what really makes that tick? I mean, there's a stereotype you see in movies for the cardboard characters and such, but what does an individual really feel when they kill for money, and not just once, not just to defend your family or in warfare, but you take money and you kill pretty much whatever is required? What does that require in a person? So my answer was, it takes a broken person on some level to even contemplate that. As far as external, the wounds, yeah, I mean, I was conscious of the fact that, you know, and as we rewrite when we're younger, in adolescence, you mess around with books and stories, and you get older, and, you know, you look back on those writings, and well, you know, you have the superhero kind of characters, you know, Superman, mm-hmm. you know, he's not Superman, he gets shot or stabbed, and he jumps right back up, and blah, 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 and so I consciously wanted it to be, you know, swordplay, knife play, getting shot by arrows and stuff, these are not small things, you know. Modern day, you know, we kick the table and stub our toe, and we out for a minute or two, and we limp for part of the day. Mm-hmm. You know, getting shoved by, you know, stabbed by a sword shouldn't be a minor thing. Mm-hmm. And I think most modern authors would agree with me with that. So I really want it to be. I want the reader to feel as much as you can through writing. You know, how does that feel to be shot by a crossbow? You know, and what does that do to you? Not, you know, he also has some abilities that we don't have, so he's able to take a bit more and to heal a bit faster than we do. And book two gets a lot more into that.
Okay.
Some readers did question, he does take some wounds. He feels those wounds.
Yeah.
But he does recover relatively quicker than I or you would. Mm-hmm. But in book two, we get more into why that is. Mm-hmm. He has a lot more to, he has no idea. Mm-hmm. And when he meets people of his, I won't get too much into it, but whom I like him a little bit.
Yeah.
And he sees what they can do.
Okay.
He starts to get like, oh, there's a whole world I have no idea. Imagine being Gandalf with that kind of power, but you weren't raised among your kind. You were raised mm-hmm. in a human land. And when you start to develop weird, you know, powers, or Harry Potter, what do you want to call it?
Yeah.
You know, you have such a small glimpse of that world through your experience of your powers. And then you might meet someone who's raised with them, and they can go, oh, no, 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 no. Mm-hmm. Or Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You know
what I mean?
You know, he wasn't raised by Jedi, and like the old days were, so mm-hmm. he learned his powers in his 20s, and so up until then, he thinks it's just a way to move stuff around, kind of, you know, when he could concentrate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, But now you go back into prequels, which I don't really love, but, you know, where little kids can do it, Luke Skywalker could do it 20, little kids are doing it because they were raised it, and they know the whole world, they're trained properly. So that's what I sort of get into here, you know, is that there's no Yoda really for him. So he has to pretty much learn it by getting his ass kicked by people who have those powers and right. know how to use them. But he's a fast learner, and so...
That's good. You know, I'm glad to hear that, because I liked that sort of... You know, to sort of touch on the two points that you just made there, I think talking about the sort of getting hurt, like you set up this world of like thieves and assassins and their sword play, and there's so I think if you want to make that world more believable, I think people getting hurt, it really draws you in. It felt very authentic reading it. It felt not that I've ever been in a knife fight, and I'm glad I haven't, and I hope I never am. But it felt, you know, there were consequences. I think authors often are talking about that nowadays, and we were talking about that on one of the panels too, is that there have to be consequences for actions. Otherwise, it is just a straight-up superhero thing. And there's a place for that too. But,
sure, nothing wrong with that.
You know, but for what you know, you're doing, I think having the consequences, I think the reader becomes much more invested in it, you know, because it's like, you know, something can really go wrong here. But I did like the, you know, the sort of the powers element of it too. And I'm happy to hear that that book two is going to be kind of exploring that more. So, you know, let me ask you this then. When you signed on with Pyre, was it a two-book deal from the beginning, or was it with like one book with an option for more books?
Oh, it was three.
It was three. Okay, yeah. So there will be a third book.
Yep, then. I'm writing it right now. And that will, people always ask me, you know, how far this will go. And I think in a modern age of fantasy, you know, we get a little leery of series because sometimes, well, they can, sometimes they go on forever and there's no end in sight. And you sometimes wonder after 10 books, where am I going with this journey?
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And sometimes, you know, with Mr. Martin, who I love, I'm a big fan, but you know, there's been a big gap between books and he's gotten some flack for that. Mm-hmm. And obviously you're familiar with that situation.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I think some fans are leery. Oh, they want to know up front, how many books is this going to be so I can invest my time in? I know what I'm getting into. So, yes, three books. It tells the complete story of Kame.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, I don't have any more plans to visit with him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not to say that at some point I might not have a kick-ass idea for a Kame book later in the line.
Sure.
But three will finish his story arc.
I think that's a smart way to do it, and I think I see a lot of authors and publishers kind of going that route, because I think particularly in fantasy and also science fiction to a certain extent, people like those series. But as you said, there have been too many examples of, all right, this is book 12 now, and when is this going to kind of wrap up? And Mike Cole, who's an author whose, I guess, his books are going to be coming out in 2012, we were talking about this a little bit yesterday about how, you know, with fantasy a lot, you read books sometimes, and I know for me, I want to have, as a reader, I always, for most fantasy, if I've gotten 100 pages into it, that means I'm enjoying it and I'll finish it. And and the thing is like, even if it doesn't have a great ending or resolution or, you know, awesome events at the end, you know, I'll enjoy it anyway because I like sort of living in that world. But I have to say, a lot of times with a lot of fantasy, you get to the end of the book and you're like, oh, okay. That's about it. Right. And I think we were talking about Peter V. Brett, how in his book, The Warded Man, which there, you know, now there's The Desert Spear, and I think that's going to be four or five books maybe. And he's talked about doing different parts of the continent and stuff. But in The Warded Man, what's great about The Warded Man is it felt great at the end. It felt like it was building, it paid off. And right. That, unfortunately, doesn't happen in fantasy a lot. But I think now you are seeing it happen a little bit more, because I think readers complain about that a lot. I think they're just like, we're just meandering through this world. And I think, you know, kind of the smart way to do it is if what you're talking about is, hey, it's going to be three books. Within that three books, you know, it's going to have, you know, each book is going to have its own ending. And right. Then in that trilogy, for, you know, I don't know if you're going to call it a trilogy at the end, even though it's three, but you know, that will have an end. Will you want to write more in that world? Fine. But it's like that sort of Robert Jordan thing of, we have to wait till the very last book for all this to pay off.
Yeah.
You know, as much as people love those books and those books are still selling, you know, I know lots of people who you're like, oh, I lost track. I I lost interest at book five.
You get fatigue.
Yeah. And so I think it's smart to sort of have a much tighter focus about it and just sort of have finite things. Even so much to where somebody like Brent Weeks, when they signed his books, I think he's through Orbit, I think, his books. I don't know if you're familiar with Brent's work.
Sure. But
they put those out as three paperbacks. I don't know if it was within 3 months, where it was really quick, though.
One day they weren't there, next day all three were there.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
And it was a very interesting way to do it. And I think he's had a lot of success, so I don't know if we're going to see a lot more of that. Because I think people were like, yes, a trilogy, and it's done, it's and I done. Can read it. Because I even Lou Anders, who is the editorial director at Pyre, I know he's talked a lot because he has to read so much. He doesn't get to read for pleasure so much because he's reading people submitting. You know, he told me, because I forget what book we were talking about, I think maybe it was the George R. R. Martin stuff, because I don't think he's read that. And he said, he's like, oh, at this point in my life, I'm not going to read something that's not done yet. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think he's not alone. I think there are a lot of people who are like, when it finishes, then I'll start it.
Right.
You know, because there's so much great stuff out there that, you know, if you're someone who's going to feel very unfulfilled by a story not being resolved, I think you can go other places with it. But
that's why it's important to me to have a resolution for each book. I look at it as each book is standalone, and the fact that you probably want to read Shadow's Son before Shadow's Lore, because you're going to meet the characters and get a lot about them, but you probably wouldn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
Shadow's Lore has a different tone. You know, I want each book to stand on its own.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So if someone only has two for whatever reason, and not only that, for the reader, you know, you should have a payoff for reading a complete novel. It shouldn't just end ... and then, you know, we'll finish this tale next year or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's really fair in some ways. I guess there are a few stories that are so epic that they're going to take 5 million words to tell the whole story, and readers has to get it through their head that each physical book is just an extended chapter in that story. Like Mr. Martin's, you know, mm-hmm. I get that. From the start, he wasn't coy about what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge tale that involves this and that. And he does give you payoff, I think, for most of the things of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Feast of Crows, you can argue that he pretty much just truncated it. But, you know, he's got so many characters and plot lines going, I can't, at this point in my career, comprehend what he's doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you're a computer programmer and you're just in college level, I guess to go into what, you know, the NSA works, does in their computer banks would be like, what the hell are you guys doing? Mm-hmm. How does it even work? It blows your mind, you know what I mean? That's sort of, it's a difference, you know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
So, and then again, you know, where was I going with that? That was pretty much it.
Yeah.
I mean, that was my point. Anyway, yeah. So yeah, there's a resolution for each book. There's an end plot resolution, which is really weird for me. This is my first series.
Mm-hmm.
I've written a book before it was published,
mm-hmm.
but they were always standalone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you write it, you know, the whole journey within one volume. This is my first shot at writing a series,
mm-hmm.
and it's much different.
Sure.
Because to carry the characters are easy to carry through. You already met them, you know them. But the plots, to not just take the same old plot and rehash it for book 2 and 3, which disgusts me, the idea that it has to be a whole new organic thing,
mm-hmm.
but the same characters in the same setting pretty much. So that was really a challenge for me. And the third one's really a big challenge. I want to have that satisfying, you know, moment towards the end where the reader really will not only have that book's resolution satisfying, but now can look back on all three and go, oh, wow, that
right.
was really a great ride.
Yeah.
And it's tough to pull off because, you know, it's practice, first of all.
Sure, sure. All right, so Shadow's Son obviously is available. Shadow's Lore, you said, is you can pre-order at Amazon, or it's actually shipping now at Amazon?
Amazon's actually shipping. You pre-order probably any bookstore you want, Borders, Barnes & Noble.
When will it most likely start appearing in your Barnes & Nobles and Borders?
I don't have an exact date. I'm going to guess probably by the 21st it should be almost anywhere.
Of June, by June 20th.
Yeah, June.
Okay.
Maybe before then.
So that's and then book 3 will be out within a year or so? Is that sort of the time frame of that?
Yeah.
Great, great. Very good. So, John, to finish up, why don't you tell people your website, your Twitter, all that kind of stuff so they can, you know, meet up with you online a little bit?
I'd be happy to. Just www.johnsprunk.com, very easy.
Mm-hmm.
I have a blog, Fear of the Dark, on Blogspot, which is, I think, just blogspot.johnsprunk.com. I'm on Facebook as myself. I'm on Twitter as jsprunk70. Please friend or follow, whatever you want to do. Say hi. I have a fan page on Facebook too, but even if my Facebook normal page, you know, if people want to friend me, they've read the book, I'm happy to do that. I want to be accessible, you know, and I love to answer questions, and you know, if you have a comment, fire away, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, sounds good, John. Thanks for taking time to do the interview, and I'm looking forward to reading the next book.
My pleasure.
All right.
Looking for interesting places near you? Find them with MapHook, a location-based social network available for free at maphook.com and as a free iPhone app in the iTunes Store. Find it, do it, share it, get hooked. MapHook.com.
And we're back. Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with John Sprunk. Go and check out his books, Shadow Sun and Shadows Lore. They are available through Pyre at your local bookstore and Barnes & Noble and Borders if you have one of those still in your area. Once again, I have my Geek Dad song out right now. Please go and download that for free at johnanilio.bandcamp.com. And you can follow me at twitter.com/johnanilio. Patrick.
Not a lot of Borders around anymore.
No, I guess not. I suppose not.
But there are several on the Borders. Now, you can't go in there and buy a book, but you can get a chimichanga.
Mm. Yes, and there's nothing better than reading science fiction and eating chimichangas.
But they did get rid of my favorite little appetizer, which was their version of Chili's Southwestern egg roll.
Mm.
They used to serve it with this jalapeno chili jelly.
Ugh. That sounds disgusting.
Oh my God, it's so good. Ugh, so good. So good. Now I want a sopapilla too. Sopapilla, yeah. A little bit of honey on it.
Soap and jelly. Excellent. That taste sounds fantastic.
Sopapilla.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
God.
East Coast guy here. East Coast guy.
Jersey guy. Jersey Shore.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go tan now. So.
I can hear the chains around your neck jingling a little bit as you talk. You know, it's kind of funny. One of my cousins who grew up in the 70s, but he had to get married very young. We all know why.
Ooh.
And so he kind of missed the whole disco scene. And I got to know him much, much later in life when he was in his 40s. And he kind of tried to regress to that disco scene, and he started wearing this gigantic, thick gold chain.
Mm.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I was telling my wife the other day that for my confirmation, I got a St. Christopher's medallion, and there was a time where I wore a medallion. I was like 13 years old, you know, but still, I was very much the stereotypical Italian dude with a medallion on. So there you go.
See, I never went through confirmation.
Yeah, it's okay. You didn't miss much. Anyway, well, whoa. All right, I guess we have to talk about barbecue now. And yeah. Yes, we are getting punchy. We are actually recording two podcasts tonight, so
we're
beyond brother. Punchy. So I apologize if I offended anybody.
I don't think you did. But you know, the only reason I didn't go through confirmation is because I did not. You know, I went to parochial school until high school, and then I my best friend was going to public school. I begged to go to public school because I wanted to be with my best friend. I didn't want to. You know, have to start over with friends. And so I got to go to public school, and then I never did the confirmation thing. So there. Usual stuff, people. You know, twitter.com/ATFMB. Go to functionalnerds.com. Check out all the posts we have there. Click on some stuff. There's some cool things to click on. Click on stuff. twitter.com/ATFMB. twitter.com/JohnAnilio. JohnAnilio.bandcamp.com. Is there anything I'm forgetting? ATFMB.com, SF Signal, check out the podcast over there. All that good stuff.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, everybody. We will see you next week.
Look him in the eye. He's an angry robot. Robot wasn't always mad. He started out so happy, but things went bad. Cause when he hooked up to the internet, what he saw there filled him with pained regret. He wanted to go on a killing spree, to rip the souls from meat bags and set them free. His eyes on Bobby in the circuit wouldn't let him kill just anyone he made. He's an angry robot.